With the church in the grips of an international clerical sexual abuse crisis, one might wonder who would want to become a priest anytime soon. Pope Benedict himself was concerned about fidelity to priestly ministry and the very future of vocations when he inaugurated a year of prayer for priests back in June 2009. In his letter to priests announcing that decision, the Holy Father said the year is meant to deepen the commitment of all priests to interior renewal for the sake of a stronger and more incisive witness to the gospel in today's world.
The priesthood is the love of the heart of Jesus. This touching expression makes us reflect with heartfelt gratitude on the immense gift which priests represent, not only for the Church, but also for humanity itself. I think of all those priests who quietly present Christ's words and actions each day to the faithful and to the whole world, striving to be one with the Lord in their thoughts and their will, their sentiments and their style of life. How can I not pay tribute to their apostolic labors, their tireless and hidden service, their universal charity? How can I not praise the courageous fidelity of so many priests who, even amid difficulties and incomprehension, remain faithful to their vocation as friends of Christ, whom He has called by name, chosen, and sent?
I know priests who've dragged drug addicts out of the gutters and given them new life and hope. I know clergy who've taken kids out of Nairobi's massive and decaying garbage dumps and given them training to become computer programmers, social workers, or teachers. I know one Congolese priest here in Rome who so energized the tired faithful here that they've become virtual Congolese citizens, helping to build schools, purchase wells, and farming equipment for their less fortunate African brothers. I know priests who have died for their faith in India, in Africa, and the Middle East, simply because they dared to be priests and to live a life of true Christian witness. Father Bernie O'Connor, an official at the Pontifical Congregation for Eastern Churches and a regular contributor here on Vatican Radio, told me that many priests today are demoralized by a perception that their ministry has become irrelevant. The year for priests is meant to encourage young men to take up Christ's cross and become true witnesses of the Lord.
I think there's a number of influences in our society that are impacting upon the everyday Catholics as well, which suggests that the ordained priesthood is irrelevant, or at least certainly not as relevant as it once had been. And this is having an influence upon priests themselves. I think the Pope is aware that there's demoralization, and there's uncertainty and hesitancy, and a certain insecurity. And I believe he wants to show by this year of the priests that there still is major relevancy, major necessity, and major vitality, which are characteristic of the vocation. He wants to endorse that and support it. For example, recently in Ars in October, there was a retreat, international retreat for priests. And the Holy Father wrote a letter having to do with his blessing upon the retreat. And one of the comments he made is that he says, the priest more than ever in this time should be a man of joy and hope. And that even when reflecting upon the patron of parish clergy, the cure of Ars, we're not thinking in terms of a morbid seeking of mortification, but rather of all that is vital and revitalizing, of the potential for evangelization and new life. That is the essence of priesthood.
Now, while seminaries in Africa and the Middle East are swelling, in the Western world, there's a real crisis in vocations in the priesthood. What do you tell young men who might be considering a vocation, or even those who've never even thought about one?
Well, I think what we have to distinguish here is, what do we mean by vocation to priesthood? In terms of crisis, I think the real crisis is not one of holy orders. The real crisis is a crisis of baptism. And people not taking seriously the responsibility to seek after God and to try to define their lives in terms of God's will for them. That is now considered archaic kind of reasoning and thinking. So, for example, I was reading Time magazine in early October, and they were talking about heroes of the environment, all the attention that's going to be focused in Copenhagen and elsewhere upon saving the planet. And what was interesting was Time had a caption, "We can all make a difference." Well, the very same reality exists for priesthood. In baptism, we can all make a difference. And what the advice that I would give anyone considering religious vocation is, first of all, to ask questions such as, what difference does Jesus make in the world? How does belief in him and association with the church actually change the reality of the world in which we live? And then how does it change the reality of who I am, of who we are as people? And I encourage people, pray, certainly. Read. Have a deepened knowledge of the faith. Most people's formal understanding of their Catholic heritage is on an elementary school level, though they may have a university degree otherwise. They know little. Well, you can't defend faith, you can't live for faith when you have an ABC understanding of that faith. So pray, read, reflect, review the difference that a faith commitment is making in your life, and allow that to be renewed on a regular basis. Certainly in terms of the sacraments, but also in terms of retreat options and spiritual direction options, because the essence of discipleship is an actual fact, discipline. I want to go back, though, just one moment to Africa, India, places of this nature. People say, oh, Father Bernie, look at all the upswing in vocations. Be very cautious, because we have cultural situations which are influenced by economics. When my culture in Eastern Canada was poor, post-depression years, post-war years, we had an incredible upswing in vocations. The church was a way for social upward mobility, and people saw themselves as having a security by identifying with ministry. Did that in fact mean quality of vocations? I'm not so sure that is the case. And I observe in third world countries today, where again people feel that they're lifted out of poverty, they're given opportunities for education, they're given opportunities for enhanced dignity by entering into the mission of the church as regards priesthood and religious life. We have to be very careful in our critique of what those vocations actually entail. We cannot have priesthood as camouflage for other agendas.
You frequently visit Holland, where you speak to young seminarians about the priesthood. They're studying for their vocation in probably one of the most secular nations here in Europe. What do you say to them as they are preparing for a life in the public eye?
One of the great joys that I have in going to Holland is precisely as you've expressed it. This is a truly secular nation. And what I admire deeply about the efforts of the bishop in the area where my seminary is located, which is Haarlem and Amsterdam, is that the church has been able to take a look seriously at how it responded to the formation of clergy in the early years after the Vatican Council. For example, about 1967, all the seminaries of Holland closed, because the bishops at that time had the notion that maybe people should be formed for priesthood in normal university settings, with rubbing shoulders with those pursuing secular professions. They should live in parishes and acquire a formation, as it were, on site. Well, 30 years later, they realized this did not work, and the vocational level dropped to zero. Now they've decided, well, perhaps that approach wasn't correct. Now, there's the key. I think it is wonderfully courageous and sensitive and sensible that the bishops are able to say, we tried this approach, it didn't work, so let's pursue another. And so they've reopened seminaries, not exactly on the traditional model, but modified, with greater input from lay presence, with greater involvement with various kinds of other programs and courses in the seminary premises that may have been seen in recent years. And there's a wonderful atmosphere in which people can inquire and ask within themselves and discern within themselves in a supportive environment as to whether or not God is calling them in this direction.
But is there a special way that these young men can be prepared for the extreme conditions, perhaps, of secular life in a place like Holland?
What's interesting in Holland, I meet so many of the people there when I go on visits with students and faculty, and I think the culture itself, believe it or not, makes the task slightly easier. For example, Bishop Punt has inaugurated evangelization and mission stations for the training of lay missionaries within the secular culture of Holland. And the seminarians assist in those programs and become trained in that. But what makes it easier is the disillusionment that you see everywhere in the country. People are not happy with the economic situation, the social situation, and with themselves. And even unknowing to their own consciousness, perhaps, they're seeking as to why they have this void and emptiness inside themselves. So there is a very slow turning around in people's minds and hearts wanting to understand what is available out there and what has traditional form of religion and spirituality said that maybe we can recover and maybe uncover and discover in new ways. That is helping the notion that priesthood has greater relevancy than was previously thought to be the case.
Now, are there any special criteria for selecting or accepting young men to the priesthood? And when do you know that they're ready?
Oh, Tracy, these are very difficult questions. There's no formula to say this man is now ready to be a candidate or this man is truly ready to be ordained. We never know perfectly. We never know completely. We never know totally. We know partially. And with the assistance of the various formation teams, including lay men and lay women, to be able to determine, is this person credible? Do they seem rational? Do they seem consistent with the basic values of our church and to some measure of our culture and society? Can they go out and witness in a way that's persuasive? Or do they come across as eccentric or erratic, in which case we have to hesitate? In some cases say no, and other cases say not yet. Hopefully the process of formation, which includes pastoral activity and even a pastoral year, allows people to sense, how am I coming across to those whom I serve? What is their response to me? What's their impression? What's their intuitive sense as to who I am in their midst? And I think that today we take more and more seriously that kind of response from parishioners and from professionals, psychologists, sociologists, etc., to be able to say there's a problem here, look at it, in the case of so-and-so. Or we see these qualities in this candidate, but we also see where they need to be strengthened or modified in certain ways. It's much more forward and candid than, in my opinion, was the case in the past. And this is a positive development in formation.
The church has been in the throes of the sex abuse crisis in recent years, and also is grappling with the issue of gay men in the priesthood. Mm-hmm. How is the church dealing with these issues, and what should young priests be considering today in how to respond to these concerns of the faithful?
One of the words, which is almost a buzzword in today's society, is transparency. Now, admittedly, sexuality is not a topic that everybody's comfortable either discussing or disclosing. And I think what's important is today emphasis in spiritual direction in seminaries and in various kinds of lectures and visiting experts coming to the seminary, etc. Various emphases there are upon matters of personal sexuality, how we express it, how we live it, how we understand it, how we accept it, and how we project it. And how we feel about being comfortable enough to discuss with lay people issues of sexuality, which are, of course, vital to their existence as well as to ours. So there's a great deal of attention being given. Now, to be honest with you, one of my concerns is that very often when people have sexual difficulties in their own life, for example, an issue of identity and sexual orientation, they're not open to specifying that or discussing it often. They will try to conceal it. And formation teams can only urge that these matters be opened up in the context of spiritual direction. And in some cases, assistance being given to allow people to sit with a psychologist, psychiatrist, etc., to explore what sexuality is as a reality within the life of this candidate. But if the candidate is not willing, or the candidate is hiding, the team cannot route it out as if we have some special device to say, aha, bisexual, homosexual, can't do it. So what's asked and what's urged is cooperation in a supportive way, not a condemnatory, judgmental way, but in a supportive way to help a candidate determine, can they live celibacy maturely, honestly, openly, and in a sense of joy and hope, as the Pope recommended at Ars.